Chinese authorities stepped up security around Tiananmen Square today and kept foreign reporters away, a reminder of the government's attempts to quash any memories of what happened there 30 years ago today, the brutal crackdown by the Communist Party on pro-democracy protesters. The student-led demonstrators wanted greater freedoms from the communist government, but after weeks of standoff and some negotiations, the military moved in and opened fire, and the world watched in horror. Remember that one young man facing off against and climbing up on a tank. John Pomfret was there covering the protest for the AP. He joins us now from KQED. John, there was such a long buildup to what happened in June 1989. At first, it was thrilling to watch with millions protesting. Some thought maybe there was going to be some sea change in China. It must have been incredible to be there.
Of course. And I was a 30-year-old reporter at the time, and it was just to see, to witness in every direction. If you would get onto these walkways, you would look, and there would just be millions of people carrying banners, demanding, hoping for a freer, different China. And that exhilaration of seeing these people and witnessing them push through police barricades peacefully, demanding and hoping for a different kind of country. That was an extraordinary, exhilarating experience. And then, of course, there was martial law, which was declared on May 20th, 1989, which was followed relatively rapidly by the crackdown on June 3rd and June 4th, 1989.
Yeah. I remember talking to you a few years ago about this, and you talked about you were at a friend's apartment and you'd gone downstairs, you were walking. Was it a shock when the crackdown happened? Remind us what happened.
So May 20th, 1989, martial law is declared, and the government then begins to deploy troops around the city, specifically to the south and the west of Beijing. And ordinary Beijing citizens basically go out to meet the army and to go out to basically lobby with them, not to carry out any type of bloody crackdown, starting basically on May 20th. And within the military, we now know there was significant opposition to the potential for a military crackdown as well. The military basically, several factors and generals basically, one general basically called in sick. And their argument was that the People's Liberation Army is the army of the people and it should not be cracking down on the people. That said, when the order came, I happened to have had dinner with a friend of mine in the western suburb of Beijing and out near the Ministry of Defense and the Military Museum. And starting around 9:30 p.m., we were outside basically taking the air. There's a Chinese expression, if you walk 100 steps after you eat a meal, you'll live till 99. So we were following that tradition. And out from the Military Museum and the Ministry of Defense, these armored personnel carriers emerged, backed by phalanxes of troops, and they rammed their way over a bridge that had been blocked by buses in order to sort of protect the center of the city, and they began to open fire. And I was just, I'd never heard gunshots fired in anger before in my life, and I had no idea basically what to do other than basically hit the deck. And that's when the crackdown pretty much began.
Yeah. Suddenly you're snuggling up against a curb and there's live fire everywhere. You write about mothers and fathers who just before the crackdown had come to try to drag their kids out. You saw people fall all around you. Do we know, how many people died? Do we know?
So we've learned a lot in the ensuing 30 years, but in terms of the actual death toll, we do not know. We've learned from books like The People's Republic of Amnesia by Louisa Lim that the crackdown was not simply in Beijing. It was actually all over the country. And in some cities, it was peaceful, like Shanghai, which earned the Shanghai mayor and party chief at the time, Jiang Zemin, actually the role of running the Communist Party several years later. But the crackdown was bloody in Chengdu, but in other cities as well. In terms of the actual death toll, New York Times probably did the best work, Nick Christoph and Cheryl Wudun, and their general estimate was around 800 people, but it could very well have been higher.
Yeah, 10,000.
Yeah,
one
I mean,
estimate.
In one estimate, in a British diplomatic document, we have 10,000, but we still just don't know. Obviously, the official figures are locked away somewhere, but I'm sure that the Communist Party has done a reckoning because they're very good about keeping documents.
And what was your sense, John Pomfret, being in that slaughter that day? The look on people's faces, were they shocked?
Among the older people who had lived through the Cultural Revolution and had lived through the Great Leap Forward and had lived through the anti-rightist campaign in the mid-1950s, This was, for many of them, par for the course. And that's one of the reasons why among the dead, there's a relatively low number from Beijing, because the parents had gone down to Tiananmen Square and gotten their sons and daughters out of the protests and dragged them home, because they knew the party was capable of doing this type of action.
30 million people, Chinese, died during the Great Leap Forward.
There was a famine caused by insane economic policies. And in Cultural Revolution, the estimates are well into the millions of people who were struggled to death by the Red Guard. And so among the older people, there was a sense that the party's capable of doing this because it's a cornered rat and it's going to strike out at any threat. Among the younger people, there was a deep sense of disappointment and alienation and shock at what the party was capable of doing.
What happened to the young man facing off with the tank?
We don't know. There have been lots of rumors. We don't even really know his name. It's generally believed he was taken away by people from the Ministry of State Security, but after that, we've really heard nothing about him other than rumors.
And what do you make of China today? Because you live there. You married, if I've got this right, you've married a Chinese woman.
Right.
And we in the United States, we're in New England, we see hundreds of young Chinese people every day, you know, going to school here. We look at this, you know, hyper economy. We look at the trade war going on right now. Where does Tiananmen fit in all of this?
That's a great question. I mean, on one hand, it's this wound. Many of the young people have no idea what happened. So there's this remarkable documentary called The Tank Man about that man. Mm-hmm. And people show this iconic photograph of him in front of the tank, and they don't know what it is. And so there's an amnesia about it. At the same time, among people who do know about it, I think there's various views. And one of the views is, well, if we had not cracked down, then China would be in chaos and we wouldn't be America. We'd be like India or Russia. Our democracy would be deeply flawed. And so we need actually to first develop our economy and worry about democracy later on. That's one relatively mainstream view. Hmm. Another view is that the crackdown was a huge mistake and it stopped China from moving in a more liberal direction. I mean, you have to remember on the same day, June 4th, 1989, Poland conducted the first free and fair election in Eastern European, modern Eastern European history, since, and basically ending the communist domination in Eastern Europe.
And we have to, I just have to jump in and say, and the image there is Lech Wałęsa, you know, leading the workers, jumping on top of a tank and successfully leading, you know, a workers' revolution.
Right, exactly. And in terms of quality of life, Eastern European, I mean, Eastern Europe has its challenges today with the rise of populism like we all do. But nonetheless, Chinese people say, look at what they did. They accomplished actually significantly more freedom than we have, even though our economy is now the second in the world, et cetera. And so the trade-off was enormous in terms of the loss of life, the loss of rights, and the situation that many Chinese feel are confronted with now, which is a society that's actually going back in time in terms of individual freedom and press freedom and the freedom of association. Mm.
What do you expect it to feel like, you know, as this week goes on in China?
I mean, here we are in the midst of this trade war with China. And we have to reflect on a couple of things, I think. One is to reflect on the United States and how we are and what makes us a powerful society. Is it our divisiveness or is it our ability to unify when faced with a crisis? But also I think it's important to reflect on China because there's a narrative in the United States that China is going to become an all-powerful superpower and its trajectory is always going to go up. And I think the thinking about Tiananmen Square reminds us that there's still many unanswered questions in China, not just the fate of the tank man or the death toll around Beijing, but how a country like China is going to march forward. What does the future hold for a place like that, which is still, like we are, but still very deeply troubled?
John Pomfret, his latest book is The Beautiful Country and the Middle Kingdom, America and China, 1776 to present. And we've been talking about 30 years ago this week, Tiananmen Square. John, thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.